session number 4748.
Real four. I don't think they would have realized what changes had been made during our 3.5 years of captivity in the equipment which the army had at their hands. The rifles, the various other wonderful things that had changed during the experience in the war zones and America entering the war, the different arms, vehicles, and all other supplies that had been advanced and modernized, as you might say. For a little example is, when I arrived eventually in Rangoon on my way home, which I'll relate about later on, I had never seen a Jeep before. And the biggest thrill I had, like a two-year-old, of being driven around in a Jeep, whereas that was a natural thing. We also saw some wonderful vehicles which went along the land and then went straight into the sea, called ducks, I think they were. All those little things which were everyday things in this, and as the war developed, we'd never seen any of those because we'd been shut off from the world for 3.5 years. So if they dropped rifles and things for us to use, we wouldn't have known what to do with the things. And that is the trouble. But we were going to have the assistance from these paratroopers, which I mentioned about, that had been living amongst us or around, surrounding us for this period of time. But I don't know what would have happened. I think that the event, however terrible it was, that happened in certain towns in Japan, saved many, many, many prisoners of war a fate which would have been terrible.
You mean the dropping of the atomic bombs?
I mean the dropping of the atomic bombs. I am not ashamed of that at all.
Did you know that these paratroopers disguised as Thais were around the camps?
No.
You never suspected it?
No. 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 Certainly not.
So what happened after the GI met you?
Well, after we were, we spent a certain amount of time in our camp still, because all around us we were surrounded by Japanese fighting troops with rifles. They were still armed, and we were. It really was a funny position, and we were still really guarded by the Japanese. And the Koreans for a while, but we had a lot of the them coming to us saying, look, we were very good with you, please tie our chit that we won't be treated badly by anybody to say that we were good. And of course one thing we didn't have to do, and that the Japanese during our period of captivity were very strict on, is saluting and bowing. We were made to bow and salute to Japanese officers, they were very strict on this discipline, and that of course led to a lot of beatings where they didn't receive their recognition. And that is one little thing that gave us a certain amount of satisfaction, in a little childish manner I suppose, that we made the Japs salute us, and that was just one little thing we got back. Our own. Eventually, arrangements were made for the troops to be, for the ex-prisoners of war, to be moved to get them home. And in this direction, I must pay wonderful credit to our own administration for putting the wheels into motion so quickly to enable this, to turn the whole circuit from a fighting army to a army to relieve and repatriate their ex-prisoners of war, which was no easy task because they were scattered around the Far East in so many places. I started my journey home. We had to march from our camp in Nakhon Nayak because it was a monsoon season and vehicles couldn't get to near the camp. We were then driven by lorry, incidentally the driver of the lorry was a Japanese, down to the nearest railhead. where we were taken by rail to Bangkok, and where I found myself I was detailed to do a job as a certain amount of liaison work in Bangkok, and I was billeted in the Oriental Hotel in Bangkok, and it was there that I had great privilege of meeting that wonderful lady, Countess Mountbatten of Burma.
Why did you think she was wonderful?
Because that lady went worded information, and we found that she was one of the first white women to go into any of the POW camps, only a few days after, only a day after our release. And she was often there before any British officers, and she was a her and her Red Cross ADC. They were wonderful women, and the morale that they got. And of course, you've got to bear in mind, we POWs hadn't seen a white woman for so long. And during with the natives, we were all walking around with loincloths on and things like that. And when this lady walked into the camps, and she walked. The men began to look down at themselves when they were so. They were very embarrassed to face, but she relaxed them in a perfect way and acted as a wonder. It really was marvellous, and we all hold her in great esteem, high esteem. The lady who I was chatting to, her ADC, pointed to a. I'm very proud of this, actually, very proud of this. Pointed to a river which ran just beside the Oriental Hotel and one of the large wats, that's the temples in Bangkok, and she said, did you used to swim in this river? Well, I wondered what to say, how to put it, but words came to me that I said, no, we didn't, because the natives weren't at all particular what they did in it. And I thought after 3.5 years of man-to-man talk, I was able to perhaps choose correct words. I was quite pleased with that. Then from Bangkok, we were moved by plane to Rangoon. We were transferred by Dakota in the particular sortie that I left Rangoon in. There were three Dakotas took off. We were sitting on the floor of this Dakota. It's like baggage. And all of a sudden, we began sliding down to the front of the aircraft because the pilot did a nosedive. And when he'd got out of this nosedive, he said, I'm sorry, chaps, but I had to do that. I saw what happened to the plane in front. It got caught in an air pocket and was sucked down. And with those chaps who were in that aircraft, who'd been POWs for 3.5 years, they lost their lives, and only two aircraft out of the three landed, which I think is a very sad thing. We were then landed at Rangoon, where emergency hospitals had been built, or not built, adapted schools, etc., etc., and where we had a check-up just to see how we really were, and given some clothing. Then, by various ships, we were moved from Rangoon home, and I was on one of the fortunate ones to be on the first ship to arrive in Southampton. It was a P&O ship, the Corfu. And when I arrived at Southampton, we were taken to another transit camp where we were our route, all our details were checked, etc., etc., and from there we went on leave home.
You've said, coming back to your POW days, you said that you had obviously had no contact with white women. Did sexual deprivation affect you at all, or did it mean nothing to you?
My good friend, if you live on rice and a stew, and without any good nourishment for 3.5 years, your sexual organs were only good for passing water not anything else. And that, I would say, that living on rice, it did fill you up and give you a pot belly, but within a very short while, it turned to water and you just got rid of it and you became hungry again.
You've talked about the morale quite a lot, but did any people commit suicide because of not being able to stand the conditions?
Not commit suicide, no. I wouldn't say commit suicide. They did lose interest in living, yes, some of them did, poor devils. But that's no disgrace to them.
So they just wasted away, did they?
They lost the will to live.
When you were released, was there any temptation to take revenge on the guards, on your captors, for what they'd done?
Yes, there was revenge. Feeling of revenge, yes, there was. Definitely. But when the Japanese were still armed with rifles, when we were still alive, after being incarcerated for 3.5 years, we had one thing in mind. Get the hell out of it. And that really was the object of the exercise. Revenge, you mentioned revenge. To this day, I have my own little revenge, as you might say. I wouldn't buy anything Japanese, but I wouldn't. And if I'm walking along in the City of London, if I see Japanese of my age, I wouldn't stand to a side like I would normally or get in out of the way. I would just continue walking straight through. I'm maybe ashamed to be like that, but it's just a little feeling I have. But I certainly would not take it out of the younger generation of the Japanese. No. The war is over. They didn't know anything about it, and it's best, but it's just a little thing I have myself, like I wouldn't inflict it on my own daughter, who was born after the war, because I wasn't married until after the war, and that, but it's just a little thing I have in my way.
Do you think that your period of imprisonment has affected you in any way, has altered you?
I was one of the lucky ones. I did come home. After coming home, I was affected nervously considerably. Yes, I went through a very bad period of time. The early days of my married life were very terrible, and I owe great respect and thanks to my wife, a young girl who really did all she could to nurse me and understand my horrible ways. Luckily enough, I got over it. And here I am making this recording now. It did do a lot to me, my POW exit. It taught me to appreciate things. It taught me to know my fellow man. It taught me how to handle difficult situations. It taught me that one cannot live without his companionship and fellow man, and it's in that way that after a short period of those who did return home, it was discovered that we were missing something, and we were missing the comradeship that existed in our POW camps. And from that we started an ex-prisoner of war organization known as FIPOs. We had these clubs throughout, clubs and associations throughout the country, where we used to meet, when I say used to meet, where we still meet to this day, not to look at the horror side of it, but to keep the comradeship going, and from the welfare angle to look after our less fortunate friends and comrades. I don't like using the word comrade because it always gives a wrong, perhaps, impression, colleagues who are still suffering from their experiences in the Far East, and we have many still in hospitals getting to treatment, and things are even being found after this long period that have still been living in our bodies all these number of years. And then a federation of Far Eastern Prisoner of War Clubs was started up, And our first president was General Percival, who was the GOC Malaya, who actually surrendered Mahan. Also, we are very proud to say, attended the signing of the surrender of the Japanese on board the American battleship, the Missouri. We then, the next, when our general died, as you can imagine, during his return home, there were many nasty things said in our national press about the general who gave away Singapore, etc., etc., which were grossly unfair, a lot of them. And I think our organisation really gave him a new interest in life, and he was our president until he died. The next president took over was Brigadier Sir Philip Toosey, who was actually my camp commandant during my POW life, a very wonderful man, an inspiration to us all in POW camps, but eventually, resulting from his experiences, he became very ill and he died. And the third president of the Federation to this day, I am proud to be, hold that office.
Some years ago, the government invited the Emperor of Japan here. What was your reaction to that?
Now, my reaction to that, not just personally my reaction to that, our organisation's reaction to that. And we took this line after deep thought. The Emperor visited this country as a guest of our Queen. We respect our Queen, and therefore we ignored the visit. We didn't have any demonstrations like some countries did. And those countries that did have the demonstrations, I think I'm correct in saying Canada and Holland, apologies had to be made to the Japanese. We knew that by ignoring the Emperor when he visited this country, it was the biggest insult to him to ignore him. And that's what we did. And I think our organisation got great respect for the way we behaved. I had many interviews with the police wanting to know what was likely to happen, and in fact I was interviewed by the Japanese for a program on their television. I made myself very clear in my statements to them. I had also heard them speaking before the broadcast was made, because on that particular day when the broadcast was made, the Emperor had been to Kew Gardens and planted a tree. Well, shortly after planting that tree, that tree was cut down. And I was asked by the Japanese what was my views of the insult given to their Emperor by the tree being cut down. It could only have been done by a person who had a grudge against the Japanese, and in plain words, they were blaming one of the ex-prisoners of war. As I mentioned, I had heard them talking about it beforehand, and the little bit of Japanese I understood, I could count. So I calmly said to them, I didn't like the idea at all, because I do not like the destruction of nature. It was something that your fellow countrymen did to us during POW life, and I don't agree with it at all. Therefore, I don't agree with that tree being cut down, because nature was damaged. But I said, you have been asking me a lot of questions. May I ask you a question? How old was the person who cut the tree down? And they said, 35. I paused for a while and then said, if you add up the number of years, that person couldn't have been a prisoner of war. He was too young. Because I'd heard them in their conversation say, send you go. And send you go in Japanese is 35. That really stumped them.
When you came back to England as a returning POW, what kind of reaction did you get from British people here? Did they want to know about what had happened to you, or did they try to avoid it? Were they sympathetic or not?
They were wonderful. They were overkind, and that was our big trouble. We were emotionally upset, and it was very difficult. We used to shut ourselves away, and I know some friends of my parents put on a party for me when they came home, and all the friends came round, and that was too much for me, because somebody out of kindness thought they'd put on a record, or a gramophone record, I think they call them discs now or something, and it was Don't Fence Me In, and that really upset me intensely and made me ill for a considerable period. I think we would have been better left to gradually go into environment. We were strange animals. They'd never had people like us back before. We were not given proper medical treatment when we came back, or given hospitalisation. We were just put out into the big wide world to make our lives for ourselves again. But I have to be, I suppose, honest in saying that they'd never had to deal with this situation before, so we were new. Like nowadays, the Americans with the Vietnam POWs coming back, they are being treated in a very different way than their prisoners of war that were taken in the Far East. And I do know this for sure, because I have very close contact with the American ex-prisoner of war organization.
So you mean that you would have preferred a more low-key reception?
I think it would have been much preferable, yes, as it so happens. But people were being very kind, and they didn't know they were being kind. As it turned out, it was a bit too emotional for our... And also, being shut away for 3.5 years, people didn't realise you didn't know the latest tunes and things like that. Many things that even to this day in conversation, I never heard of that before, you must know. And then all of a sudden somebody realises that, of course, you were shut away for 3.5 years.
So that made you feel that you'd miss something?
Mm. Oh, yes. I mean, we'd missed something, but as I've explained, we learnt a lot. We learnt to appreciate things. I never leave any food on my plate to this day.